What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Hashtag CB99 Talks. I'm Combo Breaker 99. And since this is not going to be a real long episode, I'm actually going to call this episode 49.5. And I'll save episode 50 for the week coming. Because, I just want to come back and talk about some topics real quick that, you know, I've already talked about in another episode as well. But I just want to revisit on this podcast episode. And, of course, I'm going to reintroduce boxing back into the podcast, because it's been a while since I've actually talked boxing, because there haven't really been, you know, too many strong matchups. There's just been all talk, which is something I want to talk about as far as boxing goes right now. You know, the name of this episode is going to be hashtag more fights, less tweets. You know, I think that pretty much says it all if you've been familiar with the world of boxing. But first topic I just want to go back and visit. You know, I just kind of want to recap Jessica McCaskill and Cecilia Brackets. What's next for her? You know, I just want to give the women's boxing some light. And then I just want to revisit and talk about Megan Anderson, like what could be next for her, and what could be next for the featherweight division as a whole. Do you think they'll re-sign her for one or two fights? You know, we'll see. Let's talk about it. And third, I want to talk about Weili Zhang versus Rose Namajunas a little bit, and Valentina Shevchenko versus Jessica Andrade. And just Valentina Shevchenko, her thoughts as far as, you know, Weili Zhang not being able to beat Rose Namajunas. So she's not really even eyeing a super fight. So, you know, let's talk about that. And last but not least, Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury. Is this fight really signed? Is it really, really, is it really ready to go? Is it legit? Can we get our hopes up for another big heavyweight fight? You know, last time we seen Tyson Fury was a year and some change. Anthony Joshua, you know, last time we seen him out was against Kubrat Pulev, which wasn't a really big opponent, right? So, we're going to talk about that last. But, going back up to Jessica McCaskill versus Cecilia Brackets. Shout out to Jessica. She's a very tough, hard worker. The thing I like about her is, you know, she really knows how to, you know, balance out her life as far as, you know, what she's doing, you know, as far as working, going to the gym and train, and still give on a very solid warrior performance. You know, last time out against Cecilia Brackets, she went in there and fought her heart out. You know, a lot of people felt like the fight was close, but I felt like Jessica McCaskill, she dominated the first fight, much like she did in this rematch. You know, this go round, she went in there, put the pressure on Cecilia Brackets, gave her a different look that she's never seen before, really introduced a high volume pressure style, very aggressive, and just went in there and dominated and pitched the shutout. You know, so where would I rate Jessica McCaskill right now as far as, you know, on the pound for pound list and, you know, where does she stand? I think, you know, she's a very good boxer, and I think it's safe to say she's about number three or four on the pound for pound list. You know, number one being Clarissa, number two being Katie Taylor, and number three and number four could really be between Jessica and Amanda Serrano, you know, seeing as, you know, Amanda Serrano is a seven division world champion, and, you know, Jessica McCaskill is that undisputed champion at 147 now. So, Jessica McCaskill, she's definitely earned her way up at the top. You know, she's definitely proven that she's one of the best boxers. You know, I haven't really seen too many women bring the style like and the aggression like her. You know, and I think she'll be here for a while. As for Cecilia Brackets, I think, you know, Cecilia Brackets has had her day. You know, she's already broken records. You know, she's already broken a record as far as, you know, a record of title defenses. And I really don't think that she's really going to come with another style, or she's going to really evolve as a fighter now, since, you know, her day is, you know, she's been in the game for a while. And now she's about, you know, now she's entering this age where she's facing tougher fighters like Jessica McCaskill. It's kind of hard to change, you know, and I think that was evident whenever she changed her trainer to Abel Sanchez, whose style of training wasn't really going to change a fighter like her. You know, I think that, you know, Cecilia Brackets is a very basic fighter, you know, basic 1-2, and she really had trouble adjusting to this aggressive style of Jessica McCaskill. So, moving forward for women's boxing, I thought this was a very good fight for women's boxing, and it's sad that we don't really have a lot of top-ranked women like 147 and, you know, a lot of these divisions where, you know, we can get a lot of potential matchups. It is really kind of mixed up. Like what you see on the pound-for-pound list, those really are like the best women that you can find in boxing. Like a lot of the rankings, you know, from welterweight up to even 168, it's kind of just like a pick 'em. You know, there's like one or two here and there. It's not like the divisions in WMMA. You know, so I think, you know, boxing, women's boxing, I think there just there has to be a time where, you know, the women, you kind of have to, we really have to see more people like go talent scout, find like the best women they can find, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, or, you know, see women really grind harder. It just seems like the women in WMMA tend to stand out a little bit more. And I think that's why a lot of women been going over there from boxing to really test themselves and kind of break out the box. You know, Serrano, Hardy, and now Clarissa Shields. But yeah, overall, you know, Jessica McCaskill, she definitely put on a dominant performance and proved that she is one of the best women today in boxing. As far as what could be next for her, I like to see her in there in a rematch with Katie Taylor. You know, I think that she just needs to tighten up on some skill sets. You know, figure that style out of Katie Taylor, be a little bit more aggressive, and with the aggression you got to bring more power. You know, don't just go in there and throw a lot of wild winging shots. You got to be a little bit more calculated with your aggression against like somebody like Katie Taylor. So yeah, shout out to Jess McCaskill once again, proves that she's an undisputed welterweight champion. So yeah, moving on, Megan Anderson, we've been talking about her on several channels for a while now. As y'all know, Megan Anderson, her last fight was against Amanda Nunes in her UFC contract, you know, which she lost by first round submission. And yeah, Megan Anderson is pretty much a free agent as far as we know. We don't know if the UFC is going to re-sign her or not. My thoughts on that whole situation, on what she should possibly do, of course, you know, from the outside looking in, I'm not going to say she needs to do this, but if I was her, I would see that as a blessing right now, you know, losing that contract, or if she's not re-signed, it would be a blessing. You know, I think that would really be a blessing if she didn't re-sign, because she could go ahead and move on and try to pick back up where she left off whenever she first won the Invicta FC strap. Like I said this before, I feel like after she won the Invicta FC strap, she should have defended the title a few times, you know, built herself up, built up her name, built up her resume, built up her skill, and proved to not only to the world but to herself that she was evolving as a fighter. But I feel like once she won the strap, called out Chris Cyborg, and Chris Cyborg acknowledged that, it kind of put her in a different mental space where she never been before. And it put her in the mental space on the outside. The best example of the mental space that she was in from the outside was what we saw her in against Amanda Nunes. Like, that's how she looked on the outside. You know, that was the perfect example, seeing her against Amanda Nunes. That's what she looked like. You know, she was like a deer in the headlights. We actually saw it, though, because she actually, you know, got into the octagon against Nunes. You know, I think that's how she felt whenever she heard Chris Cyborg acknowledge that call out. You know, so she went missing for a while. You know, she went missing for a while and came back against Holly Holm, which was a dangerous fight, dangerous first fight in the UFC. You know, there's no way I feel like she was going to win. And she didn't. She was dominated. So ever since then, I just feel like even with the UFC fights that she did win, you know, those Santos, Norma Dumont, Kat Zingano, those were kind of like false builders for her. You know, none of them really contributed to her building up a skill set, because they were all quick first round knockouts or submission too against those Santos. You know, they're just quick wins that didn't really build her up. You know, she needed to fight tough fighters like Pam Bam Sorensen's and Caitlin Young's, you know, those type of fighters that could really push her in the right direction and help her develop as a fighter. But ever since then, you know, those fights she would win, then she would lose against the elite fighters like Holm and Felicia Spencer. You know, so it was just a kind of a hard road for her in the UFC, because the UFC is just supposed to be the elite level. You know, so whenever you're there, you always have to show up. You have to show and prove every single fight. If you don't, then bam, you will be cut. But like I said, since her contract is out now, she fought her last fight, this is a blessing where she can go back, pick things up, go back to square one. Well, not necessarily square one, but like I said, back to where she kind of left off, and maybe even switch camps and kind of work on her skill set. What type of fighter should she be? You know, what type of fighter should she be? That's the question for y'all. Like Megan Anderson, what type of fighter do you think she should be? Just all striker or a good well-rounded fighter? Does she have time to build herself as a well-rounded fighter? Well, for me, I think she does. You know, I think she has a lot of time, and, you know, she has a lot of good physicalities about her that could make her a well-rounded fighter. You know, she has the size, the weight, She could fight in the clinch well, you know, if she really learns how to use her knees and her size and her balance well. If she learns how to develop a good jab, she could be one of the best strikers like GDR. You know, I think there's so many things that could be done with her. But I think the number one thing is the mental. You know, the mental for Megan Anderson has to be built, and she needs to be with a trainer that can really bring that killer out of her. You know, if she has that killer in there, somebody needs to link up with her, help her dig deep, and find the fighter that she needs to be. You know, because the fighter that she is, sometimes you hear on like social media talking trash, that's not really her. Like, that's not really what we want to see either. We want to see a killer in there. You know, we want to see somebody in there landing big right hands like Megan Anderson, Amanda Nunes. We want to see somebody dogging fighters out like Felicia Spencer. Like, that's the type of dog that needs to be dug out of Megan Anderson, you know, if she really wants to come back to the UFC or even be a big fighter in like Bellator or PFL. Which, bringing those up, again, it's a blessing to leave the UFC because she could go to a level like Bellator. You know, you go to Bellator where there is a structured featherweight division, and in that division, you can actually develop yourself, you know, against the fighters like the Arlene Blinkos, Julia Buds. There's, you know, there's a structured division with Bellator. So in that division, once again, you can develop yourself, develop confidence, and earn your way to a title shot instead of fighting a lower ranked fighter, then jumping in there with a top ranked fighter, lower ranked fighter, championship fighter. You know what I mean? That's how it kind of messes your confidence up and messes you up mentally, because you're getting false confidence by fighting, you know, lower ranked fighters that don't need even be in there with you. And then you jump in there with a killer like a Nunes or Felicia Spencer, and that can shake a fighter. That can shake a fighter. So I think that, yeah, Bellator would be a good choice for her now that, you know, the contract is done with the UFC. That's good. Or PFL, like I said before, PFL would be good because the lightweight division would be a much better division for her as far as weight-wise, 115. There's a lot of fighters in there that she could go in there and compete against. And I think she could really give them a run for their money, you know? So there's a lot of things going on for her. Commentating. Bare-knuckle boxing. You know, Megan Anderson could do bare-knuckle boxing. I'm sure they could bring some of the larger women over to bare-knuckle boxing, you know, sign them over to BKFC. And somebody like Megan Anderson, come on, let's be honest, if it just comes down to hands, the fisticuffs, you know Megan Anderson is going to hold her own, and she's going to be knocking girls out. The way she's been knocking people out with the right hand, which is something I'm going to talk about in another video one day, as far as like some of the women that could come over to BKFC. Megan Anderson is like one of the number one fighters, because the way she's been knocking girls out, and you know you go over to BKFC, you don't have to worry about takedowns or ground game or any of that. What are y'all going to do? All she has to do is make sure she can develop a jab. But what are they going to do whenever that girl of this size and this type of power and this type of right hand gets in there and challenges you, you know? So BKFC is something that she should want to consider, because if she went over there, they would definitely support her. Because come on, Australian, you know, Australia's big on BKFC, so that could be a plus for her, you know, just being from Australia, and then just being the way she looks, you know, kind of like Paige VanZant. Paige VanZant is 0-1 in BKFC, but she's still considered like their million-dollar baby, right? So if you brought Megan Anderson, she would be treated the same way, in my opinion, and, you know, she would generate a lot of money, and she would be knocking people out. So that's something I would definitely want to see if she chose to go to a bare knuckle route. So yeah, man, I just wanted to go back and talk a little bit about Megan as a whole. It's not really over for her, I think, unless she really builds up that mentality to prove that, you know, she wants to be a fighter, you know, whether it be BKFC or MMA. But yeah, man, let's move on here. Yeah, let's go back and talk about this again. You know, Valentina made, you know, a few comments about Weili Zhang as far as the super fight. And like I talked about in another video, a separate video leading up to this podcast, you know, I already kind of broke it down. But, you know, Valentina said it's not really a super fight that she's waiting for, because I feel like Rose is going to win anyway. You know, so if Rose wins, that's a fight that's not going to happen. And like I said, my thoughts on that whole situation, I agree with her as far as not looking ahead and trying to build somebody up that still has strawweight issues in front of them. You know, they still have strawweight issues in front of them, so there's no real reason to go in and try to jump ahead, because Valentina has just gone dry in front of her. You know how it is when you start to try to overlook another fighter, that fighter that's in front of you winds up catches you sleeping and winds up beating you, you know. So Valentina Shevchenko didn't make a lot of sense on that, to just say, you know, look, I'm not looking at this super fight yet because it may not even be. Now, as far as, you know, seeing Rose win and her just predicting the winner, I'm still having trouble predicting the winner. You know, I'm still having trouble predicting the winner. That's why I haven't done my breakdown prediction yet, which I will in the weeks coming. I still feel like the fight is 50-50. There's just so many things about Wei Li that could have her win this fight, and so many things about Rose. Like, the thing I want to do in another video I want to talk about is the obsession and fear here. Like, I don't know necessarily if Wei Li Zhong is obsessed with this fight, and, you know, the way she's been looking and training, she's just obsessed with fighting again. And I don't necessarily know if Rose has fear in her in this fight. But those are the two themes that have really been kind of amping this fight up. A lot of people feel like Wei Li Zhong is looking like a mad woman out there, like she's obsessed, like she's really training hard, and that she's maybe overtraining. You know, that's something that a lot of people are feeling like she's really obsessed with this whole fight, you know. And then you look at Rose Namajunas, you know, a lot of people felt like she was ducking when she had family problems. They kept saying she was scared. So fear has been like a constant theme with Rose Namajunas leading up to this fight. It's been really interesting. So that's something I might talk about in a separate video, obsession versus fear in this one. And that's one of the reasons I can't just make a pick right now. I feel like it's 50-50 on my side, because fear, it can really be a good thing sometimes. You know, fear is something a lot of, you know, you see a lot of these animals in the wild have that help them survive and help them kill. You know, they say, you know, when you hear that the rattlesnake going off, and the way they're, you know, poised and ready to strike, is because they have fear that you might hurt them. It's not to actually kill and eat you, because, you know, rattlesnake can't eat a human or somebody that much bigger than them, but it's about them protecting themselves. So they're on fear mode, you know. So whenever you hear that rattle going, that's the fear in them, and that fear can actually help them survive. So you can't really say if Rose has fear in her, that's a negative, or that she's a punk, or that she's scared. So a lot of people calling her a scrub or calling her a coward, you know, they can just scratch that. You know, they can just scratch that. This girl's had the belt before. She's been to hell and back before, out of the octagon and in the octagon. So that's something that a lot of people can just scratch right there, that she's scared of Wei Li, or that the fear isn't going to help her win, because fear can help them. You know, I'm not a big Ronda Rousey fan, but Ronda Rousey made a good point one time when she was talking about her fights. You know, she said the reason she wins is because she has fear sometimes, the majority of the time. You know, she has fear that somebody's trying to take something from her, or, you know, take money, you know, take food from her out of her mouth, or take, you know, her lifestyle away from her. Andre Ward, the boxer, you know, Andre Ward, unified champion, he said that before. You know, he said, look, coming in there with that fear, you know, I have a fear that this person's trying to take something from me, so I go all out. It brings out the killer in him, you know. So you can just look at it in different ways like this, and when you really break down the mental to it, it makes you say, wow, this fight may be 50-50. Like, we don't know if Wei Li could be over-obsessed with it, you know what I mean? And that could lead to a negative for her, but maybe not. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a healthy obsession where she knows, if I just commit to it and stay addicted just for this amount of time until this fight night, you know, then I'm good to go. And that's what's scary about Wei Li Zhong, you know? So, yeah, definitely not a 50-50 fight a fight where I can just say Rose is going to win. It's definitely a 50-50 fight. And yeah, I definitely will talk more about this when we come closer to it, do some film studies, because, man, this is going to be big. But yeah, for Valentina Shevchenko not to look ahead, that's a wise thing. You know, I can't say, you know, it's like you can't say, oh, man, like, this girl's going to be the big thing, because, like I said, Wei Li still got a lot of work to do. You know, Wei Li still got a lot of work to do to make us say she's cleaned the strawweight division out, she's ready for the flyweight champion. And yeah, Valentina Shevchenko, man, against Jessica Andrade, you know, this is gonna be technique versus relentlessness. This is technique versus relentlessness. This is the bull versus the matador. We never know how it could go sometimes. I mean, the script says the smarter fighter always wins, but we never know what's gonna happen, right? We never know for sure, and that's what makes that fight interesting. And like I said in my previous video that I just dropped, that's what makes these two fights so exciting, and it just makes it a loaded card itself with these two fights, and that's all we needed. That's all we needed, man. We didn't need Usman Masvidal to rematch. No, man, we really didn't need that, man. But yeah, Like I said, we'll talk more about this maybe in some live streams, but let me know in the comment section what y'all think. Is it 50-50? We're going to keep talking about this, man. I'm obsessed. But yeah, last topic, man. Last but not least, man. Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury have supposedly signed a contract for a two-fight deal to face off this year. And the contract is 50-50 for Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury, you know, to fight for Undisputed. 50-50 the first fight, 60-40 for the second fight, which 60 to the winner, 40 to the loser in the rematch. And, Anthony Joshua, his promoter Eddie Hearn, he's already went out and kind of pushed it out, even though Bob Arum didn't want to discuss this yet. He said that this fight is going to be happening, that they're planning for a two-fight deal, possibly a fight in, like, June or August, and then the second fight capping off the end of the year of 2021. So my thoughts on this whole situation, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. That's kind of where I'm at with boxing, and that's what I really want to talk about with this because, you know, the heavyweight division has always been one of the it has been the biggest division all over the world. That's one of the most recognized divisions, you know, when I was growing up. And right now, I feel like this division has kind of turned into just like a soap opera, a drama. Boxing has, if you will. You know, the heavyweight division was supposed to be this division where the Titans, you know, the biggest giants were supposed to be facing off. You know, not always talking about this diva stuff about the A side, the B side, money and all this other type of politics and drama. It was supposed to about, I mean, they can get their money right, but it was supposed to be about the fight. And right now, with guys like Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, we're not really getting that. We're really not getting the best fight, the best on a consistent basis. I mean, the last time Tyson Fury fought was a damn year and some change ago against Deontay Wilder, which was a fight that had a lot of controversy around it. And he won't even give Deontay Wilder a rubber match. You know, a fighter that you were so confident that you could dominate a second time, you don't even want to fight him a third time, you know, which is guaranteed big money and guaranteed solidification of you as the best heavyweight on this side, you know. And now we can't even get you in there with Anthony Joshua. So what's the holdup? You know, and that's why it's turning off a lot of people from boxing. You know, it's turning off a lot of people from boxing because we're getting more talk. All the videos being made or just news, big news, breaking news about he said, she said in tweets rather than actual breaking news about official fight dates being made. Unlike with the UFC and MMA in general, where we talk about fights that are happening and what could possibly go on in a fight. In boxing, we're talking about, oh, this guy called this so-and-so a a-hole. This guy said, oh, this guy's a B. I can whoop him. You know what I mean? That's what boxing is reporting. You know, boxing is having to report tweets. You know, where as in MMA, you mostly hear me talking about fights and breaking them down and, you know, giving my thoughts on fights that have already taken place, which is why I want to talk about. I want to talk about the science of it. So if Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury can please make this fight, I would be happy. If they could just finally make a heavyweight fight, a pair of heavyweight fights in a row and keep it going, bring Deontay Wilder back in the mix, then I think a lot of people would be happy. You know, and I think boxing as a whole needs to do that. But if Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury can agree on a 50-50 matchup, that would set an example for, you know, the Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford sagas. And the Manny Pacquiao was in the Mikey Garcia's Terrence Crawford sagas as well. You know, 50-50 for the first fight, 60-40 for the rematch. If these other guys can agree to something like that, shoot, that sets a perfect example if they actually can make this happen. But like I said, if Anthony Joshua Tyson Fury can do this, please just make the fight. You know, let's stop talking. Let's get the location. Let's stop being divas here and let's actually make this fight. Because this is a good fight, I think. I think this is a different look for Tyson Fury. And it's a different look for AJ. And I feel like AJ's never faced a mobile, nimble boxer this big and this fast in Tyson Fury. And I think like Tyson Fury's never faced a complete or close to complete boxer like Anthony Joshua. You know, if you look at Tyson Fury's resume, it's really hard to say, oh, he's one of the best heavyweights of all time if you look at the fighters he's faced. You know, I mean, he has beat Vladimir Klitschko. And, yeah, you know, he's beat Deontay Wilder. But a lot of people downplay Deontay Wilder's skill. So how good is Tyson Fury if he outboxed a guy that you feel like didn't have great skill, you know? Can you really compare that to an Evander Holyfield? I don't think so. You know, so right now, this is kind of like a 50-50 fight to me. You know, Anthony Joshua, who to me, is a big, strong guy who's still learning on the job at times and bringing new things to the table. He could have something that disrupts Tyson Fury, you know, and Tyson Fury could have something that would disrupt him. It would be a battle of the jabs, I think. I think both of these guys have great jabs. I think that Anthony Joshua could be a little bit more dangerous than Deontay Wilder at times because he puts more punches together. You know, he'll put combinations together. And he has a body attack. He's been developing a body attack. I think the one thing that would really disrupt Anthony Joshua in the fight would be the rhythm of Tyson Fury. Again, fighting a guy who can, you know, bounce around on his feet and throw jabs, you know, straight up the middle, you know, double and triple, and then come over the top with the right hand and just be out at awkward angles. I think that would be something Anthony Joshua's never faced before. So yeah, it's going to be a good fight if they can make it. If they can make these, I just want some great heavyweight fights. You know, throw Wilder in the mix. I want a Wilder Fury rubber match, whatever. I just want good fights, no matter the division right now in boxing. And that's why I wanted to bring this up again, because yeah, boxing's been having a lot of talk, man. It's been having a lot of talk where these guys are just back and forth on IG stories and in interviews and just through he said, she said tweets, man. Like, it's starting, I'm hearing a lot of people talk to me now, man. You know, they're just telling me, like, it's pathetic. They're using that word, you know. It's not me saying it. I mean, I'm saying it too now, but I mean, it's just, not just me saying it, but a lot of people tell me it's pathetic, yo, compared to MMA. So they just need to step it up, man. Hashtag more fights, less tweets. But yeah, man, that's pretty much all I got on this episode. Like I said, just wanted to come through and drop this quick one. Episode 50 is going to be a little bit bigger, better. So yeah, man, let me know y'all thoughts on these topics I talked about. I know we talked about Megan before and Valentina before, but you know, let's talk again. How do y'all feel about some of the things going on in boxing? Let's talk, man. That's what I like to do over here. But yeah, thanks guys for, you know, new subscribers always coming through in the live chats. Make sure y'all subscribe here to my channel. Follow me on Instagram, ComboBreaker99, at All Boxing Everything for more boxing talk. But yeah, that's all I got for this episode, guys. Enjoy y'all's day. I'm going back on my grind. Like I said, just coming through. Talk to y'all once again. ComboBreaker99. I'm out. Subscribe. Peace.